Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Faith Church Podcast. I'm your host, Jay Williams. Joining me today is Jeff Clossy.
Hey, good morning, Jay. Everything all right over there?
I don't know. I stumbled out of the gates. Should try that. I forgot what I was doing. Welcome to... I didn't know which of my podcasts I was...
Oh, that's right. I always forget that.
You know, my 12 different podcasts. And I was like, welcome to Cooking with Jay. And then I, you know...
Wait, we're not cooking.
Welcome to...
Maybe it's because...
Welcome to gardening... Welcome to the gardening podcast.
Maybe it's because right now it sounds so different outside of this room than it normally does.
It is throwing me off a little bit. It is great. It is VBS week. So we always, I feel like every year we wonder, should we record at our normal time? Because there is chaos all around and we can't control it. And we're just like, eh, just roll with it. So
it's really sweet.
It is.
I just love this week of coming in, and like yesterday is typically, so yesterday being Monday for those of you who are listening to this later in the week, it's typically pretty quiet here.
Yes.
But it was not at all quiet. It was full of energy and enthusiasm and learning and connecting. And yeah, it's such a fun week. It's great to have all the kids and all the people who are helping and serving in the building this week with us. It's wonderful.
Right. So if you do hear some, screaming in the background or anything like that, rest assured that we are aware of it. But I remember one time Robbie and I were recording and they had a small group that met like right outside this window here, and they were yelling and we're like, all right, whatever, what do we, you know, they have priority.
Yeah, they do.
The podcast takes the back seat,
and it's not screaming that you and I are responsible really for doing anything about,
which is the best kind.
Yeah. Someone is, just to be clear, someone is responsible.
Someone is being responsible. It's just not us.
Yes.
We are not being... Well, that implies that we're not being responsible. We are being
responsible. The way you said that, yes.
We are just not responsible for that particular... for that particular noise.
Circumstance. Yes.
I don't know if we can make this more awkward at the beginning, but we're on a roll right now. So, you know what wasn't awkward was your message.
Hey, thanks. I'm glad to hear that. Thank God.
It was really good. I thought it was so helpful. I took a lot of notes, and now I feel like our roles are reversed. Like when you're sitting there and you're going, I took some notes, and then you have to remind yourself, this is why we should probably prep for the podcast.
Not
like we weren't in here long enough to actually prep for the podcast, but, that would take away some of its charm.
This is exactly how I thought podcast number 250 would go.
This is 250?
I believe so. I was just looking because I knew it was coming. And I do think it, unless my feed here is lying to me, I believe that's what we are on. Yep. Congratulations, Jay.
250.
That's amazing.
I haven't been on all 250.
No, nor have I.
No. I've probably been on over 230 of them, though.
Oh, yeah. It's just really, to me, it's so neat because God has been faithful. Yeah, as we've recorded this each week, and by his grace, he's used it in people's lives. Our conversational ramblings have been helpful to people, and I'm so thankful for that. It's been a really neat thing to get to do together.
Yeah.
And I enjoy every time I get to be on this, I enjoy doing it, and I enjoy sharing what God is doing in my heart and our hearts through the messages and in our church. It's been a real gift to me personally. But it is hard to believe that it's been that many. 250 seems like way too many. I guess that's kind of like the message. Like if you look too far ahead, we would have never done.
Well, I mean, when you think about it, we started it during COVID.
Yeah.
So that's been 5 years ago. What's impressive to me is that means we're averaging close to 50 a year, which means we don't take very many weeks off.
No, we don't.
That's pretty fascinating to me. So it's been, we've probably, there of those 250 episodes, there's probably been 260 some, 270 weeks tops, 260 some weeks. This is not entertaining. This is one of the reasons why our listenership is like still,
Jeff,
still modest.
Yeah. Well, it's so nice that we have no idea.
We don't have any
idea. It's such a gift.
But it is funny. Right. But I think it'd be funny if we, there's going to come a day where AI will be able to track based on its algorithms, when people are going to hit the stop button and like go on to another podcast. Cause you've done that before, right? Like
you
listen to a podcast and you're just like, yeah, I'm not going to listen to this.
Got what I needed from that one.
Yeah.
Or
I'm just not in the mood and maybe I'll come back to it, but then I forget about it. And someday we'll be able to see that in real time. And
people give us a little more leeway.
I think they do, but I think
our listenership.
Anytime I open my mouth, you start to see it like kind of dip. It's like hanging on by a thread. All right, well, let's talk about this message, which I thought was fantastic. I don't know if there's anything. I mean, I have things that kind of stood out to me. I know there was something you actually teased the podcast.
Yeah.
I feel like we got to deliver on that.
Yeah, I would love to cover that at some point. We can start with it if you want. It was this point where I was writing and I had like lots of thoughts, and I got to this place where I was thinking, do we have 10 more minutes? This is going to require some time for me to preach this without being able to have a conversation. So I just decided, you know what? I'm going to just introduce this idea and we will unpack it. And so the idea was, I was trying to flesh out some practical ways that we would lay aside sin, that we would lay aside every weight and the sin which entangles us. And it was kind of the second point. After we're honest about sin, and honest meaning it's wrong, it harms us, it harms other people, it saddens the heart of God, right? It's broken. The next step, I think, for a lot of us is to go deeper into, like, why is it that we sin the way we do? And especially if it's something that is recurring in our life and we feel like this is just an area of unique weakness for me. And I think that's part of this. Like, we each kind of have our tendencies, and we might have certain areas that are just, maybe you could say it's an easier way for us to sin. That's one way of saying it. Or one way that we feel a bit more predisposed to. Again, those are not sins that are then excused, but they are things that we can examine and say, so why do I do this? So giving an example, anger. So you and I talk to people all the time. Anger is such a common ailment and burden that we often bear as a human being. And anger is meant to alert us to things that are not right, to true wrongs. But often we realize that the anger that we experience and that maybe comes out of us is not that kind of anger. It's a sinful anger. It's an anger that hurts others. And it's an anger that might not be about a true wrong at all. And so I guess what I'm suggesting there is to, with the Spirit's help, to discern, but also in conversation with another follower of Jesus, to start to ask some questions about that. Like, what is going on in those moments for you in your heart? And I use the word on Sunday that hijacks your heart. And what I mean by that is, what is it that you are so seeking in that moment that you respond in anger? And for some people, it's going to be, you know what, in that specific situation, turns out I'm actually really afraid. And because I'm so afraid and I want to feel safe, the way I respond to it is with anger because it works. It seems to put me in a situation where I feel safe. And so that doesn't make what happened there, like the sinful anger, not sinful, but it does help you to see, this is what my heart so desires. And then what we do in that moment when God gives us insight is we go to him and say, so what do we know about who God is, who Jesus is, who the Holy Spirit is in the gospel that informs us about how to find safety? What does God want us to know and love and enjoy about him in that moment of needing to feel secure? And then we can press forward a bit more than we can by just, so what I'm saying is, it's more than just saying, I'm just not going to be angry in those moments anymore. It gets at what is driving it below the surface. And that ends up being sort of a sin underneath the sin and what our heart is clinging to for security, something that is replacing God, what God is meant to be for us. So that's just one example of it. You know, anxiety or worry, you could have a similar conversation about, like, what is going on inside of you that triggers that fear. So I would say that that's a good step. And if you haven't had that sort of conversation before, I would just encourage you to with someone in your life who's a trusted follower of Jesus. You know, Jay and I are always, we're obviously available, but we are not indispensable for those conversations. Like, anyone with the Spirit of God in them can have those. And so the questions you want to ask are, what was going on inside of you? And then what was the result of what went on inside of you? What was the consequence of it? And then what might have been a desire that really was driving your behavior? Something like that. You know, it's not a script you follow, but those are the kind of questions that I would recommend.
Yeah, I often will just say, like, when in doubt, ask why.
Yes.
Like, channel your inner 5-year-old. And so when you say, oh, I'm worried about this, why? Why am I worried about this? Well, I'm worried about this because if this doesn't happen, you know, or like, I'm worried because, you know, I might, why am I worried about my job? Well, I'm worried that I might lose my job. Why are you worried? Why does that cause you worry? Well, because then I'm like, I won't be able to pay the bills. Okay. So then you start, you keep digging with the why, and you keep, you find, okay, so then my concern is I'm afraid that I'm not going to be provided for. And then you can go, as opposed to what we'll often do is, oh, I'm worried, well, because my boss is a jerk.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not actually what's causing your worry. What's causing your worry is like several layers down below. I think that's really good. And that, that came from, I thought, I mean, you had a couple of fantastic illustrations. I love that you threw an 11-year-old girl under the bus like that. I hope somewhere she hears this message and she's like,
if she does, I hope that she can do so with a smile, because it was quite the adventure.
Yeah, it was. You were gracious in it, and it was very endearing and sweet, and it was great. But also then you talked about sin clinging, and you mm-hmm. used Augie's hair.
Mm-hmm.
Here's what I love about that illustration. Then it connects to this deeper point. What I loved about that illustration was you could have said, well, sin clings to you, and used an illustration that said like, well, when I'm at my neighbor's house and their dog hair gets on me or whatever. And I think for a lot of people who grew up in the church, certainly our era, our generation, I think you and I are from a similar generation. And in youth ministry, a lot of emphasis was on, you know, bad company corrupts good character.
Yes.
And that if you are around people who are doing bad things, then their sin will get on you. Now, there is a reality to that. There's a reality to being desensitized to sin. I've experienced that in my life, that when you're in a culture that just normalizes sin, that can desensitize us. But when you're talking about, when you're using the illustration of Augie's hair, like that's your environment. That's the culture that you've created. Mm-hmm. You brought that dog into your house,
yep.
and you are the one that deals with that. But it's also shows how sin doesn't have to try hard to get on us and cling to us. It mm-hmm. is very natural, because we often miss this. The reason why sin is tempting is because it's desirable.
Yes.
If you didn't desire it, there would be no temptation. There are so many things in this world that I am not tempted towards because I don't find them desirable. The very definition of temptation is I want that thing. And so just how it kind of like, it's on us even when we don't realize it. It's affecting us even when we don't realize it. And if we think of sin as just the things we do, then we think, oh, I only sinned when I said that harsh thing to that person. But we don't realize like, but the desire to say that thing, and why did I want to say that thing? Like, that's the dog hair that's just clinging mm-hmm. to me. And it's actually affecting my heart. You know, just stopping from saying the thing, we've said this so many times, is just stopping from saying the thing is not dealing with the sin that was there. The question is, why? Why did you want to say that thing? What does that reveal? And what I love about your, when you were talking about anger, I don't know where you got that, if that's your quote or if that's from somebody, that anger is intended to alert us to what is not right or what is wrong.
Yeah, I mean, that's, I've just,
unjust.
I don't know if I'm quoting anything there. Just, that's my working definition.
We're going to quote Jeff Clossy. So we're going to yep. put that in an infographic, and we'll put that on our
AI will help us.
AI can put you on an infographic, and we'll, but yeah, I think that idea of like, yeah, it is designed to alert us to what is unjust or what is broken or what is wrong. But the question is, but wrong for whom and in what world?
Exactly. Right? Whose kingdom?
So, yeah, whose kingdom? Because most of our anger, I've often pointed out that, you know, we don't get angry about the things that Jesus gets angry about. But how you just said that right there, I think is just ratchets that up exponentially. That when you think about, well, why is this angering me? Why am I angry right now? Whose kingdom is this? Is this against or wrong? Like, who has been wronged in this? And if it's if it's my own, most of the time, most of our anger is because it thwarts our own kingdom. Like mm-hmm. how I saw my day going, what I thought, you know, how I thought this trip to Walmart was going to go, how I thought this dinner was going to go, how I thought my kids were going to respond, how I thought, like, it's so much about our own unmet expectations. It's not actually about true justice. It's about our own world and our own sovereignty being thwarted. It's rarely about what is against God's kingdom and what is broken in the world that is pulling us away from God's kingdom. Now we can spin it that way.
Yes. It's a self-righteousness.
I can spin it that, like, okay, I thought my kids were going to respond in this way, and that's really what I'm angry about. Like, well, but they're supposed to honor their mother and their father, and so therefore this is displeasing to God that they are disobeying me. That's called spin. That's twisting what is, that's like hiding my kingdom under a cloak of God's kingdom. And that happens a lot. And that's really dangerous. But I think that idea of trying to dig down and say, okay, why am I responding this way and getting at some of those root desires?
Yeah. And I think anger is a good example because it can be so many different things. So that's part of the issue with sin is it's in some sense, sin is very clear and black and white. But in another sense, from another angle, anger in one moment may be sin, and anger in another moment may not be sin. And externally, it may look the same. But it's what's going on within your heart that changes it. And anger is, like, we're warned so much about it. Like, it to me, it seems like anger does have that alerting function, and then we are supposed to proceed not through that anger because it's so dangerous for us. Like, don't let the sun go down in your anger, for example. Anger alerts us, and then we move forward always in love, and that might mean consequence, you know, like if there's an actual injustice, but it might not. Like, we are usually going to be predisposed to misusing anger if we let it fester and we act out of anger. And there's a sense in which anger is automatic. So, like, we have a response, and then there's a sense in which we can indulge it and we can enhance it by what we think about after we're alerted to the wrong. So, like, for example, in that race, so I'm running this race with an 11-year-old. Imagine there was some just cruel person in the crowd who was just yelling rude things at her about the speed at which we were going. Imagine, like, anyone watching that would be right, I think, in that moment to have a reaction internally of, like, anger, because that's wrong. It's a violation of what is good in that moment. But then if I fly off the handle and I chase the person down the road because I'm going to deal with them, that is not right. That is not the way that God would intend for us to respond to that situation. So I do think in our emotional world, especially, that's why we need to be able to go and do what you're just describing, that sometimes it may be sin, sometimes it may not be, and we need to know why to determine that.
Okay, so I think in that you kind of hit on something I think that's really helpful, because not that this is the podcast about anger, but like you said, this is a really common.
It is.
It's common, and then the question is, like, well, how and when does anger turn to sin? Like, when is it sinful? And one is, if I realize that it's my kingdom that has been thwarted here, mm-hmm. that's clear. That's just sinful anger. But if it's a true injustice like that, well, then what? And I love even what you said there. The question is, okay, then what is my responsibility? How do I move forward? And what is my role? Because another way that anger can turn sinful is not just starting in my own kingdom, but now me trying to take on a role that is not mine.
Mm-hmm.
So God is the deliverer of justice. But in that illustration that you talk about, so someone's mocking this 11-year-old girl and she is upset. Well, if you go chase that guy down,
mm-hmm.
what are you not doing?
Exactly.
You're not ministering to the 11-year-old girl and relieving her suffering and comforting her, which is much more likely to be what God would be calling you to do in that moment. I think that there are times when I'm just even off the top of my head thinking about it right now, that most times where we then take on, where we have an actual injustice or something that is deserving of anger, And then we take it on ourselves to either make to make it right, to fix it. That's often going to take us into sin.
Yes.
You think about, like, that's where it can become revenge, or that's where a lot, so much of our acting, what we call acting out in anger, is our desire to inflict pain on somebody else. Like, that's a really common thing. And in our anger, our desire is to make somebody else hurt the way that we were hurt, or the way someone else was hurt. So in a situation like that, the world would see it as amazing if you came up with some way to shame that guy the way, and make him feel the way that that little girl would feel in that moment. And we would say, ah, that was good. But that isn't the way we would be called to respond in the kingdom. And that's hard, but I think it's taking on that role of, like, making it right versus what our role is in the face of injustice. The scriptures lay that out for us. So we are meant to relieve suffering. We are meant to comfort those who mourn and grieve. We are called to speak up, like to speak for the voiceless, like to uphold justice, we are called to do those things.
Yes.
But not in a broken, sinful way. Like, we'll never obey God. We'll never please God by disobeying him.
No.
Right? Like,
do not be overcome by evil, but overcome evil with good.
Right.
Right. And that's a key example of it. And I think anger can push us often. And it's meant, like, to, I think God gave anger to us as a gift, actually, that's meant to be redeemed. Sometimes I think we just talk about managing it, anger management, but actually I think it's more of like a redemptive thing, using it the way God actually intended. So it is meant to alert us, and then it's meant to move us towards some action. It really does kind of like prime you to do something. But like you're describing there, often the thing it primes us to do, because sin clings to us, is a harmful thing, is not of God's kingdom towards the person and maybe even the role we have. I think it's a great example to the last thought about anger is it helps us to realize why it's important to be reflective about the sin that's clinging to us and not just in the moment try to resist it. Because anger for most of us in those moments is an automatic, like, we don't think about it response. It just happens. And that's by God's design, because that is meant to help us see what is happening within us. That response gives us some insight into our heart and our desires and who it is that we're serving. So I know that I've been there. It can feel like such a burden when you're like, I don't want to react that way in that situation, and I just keep doing it. I've been there. It's not easy. By the grace of God, though, we can get to those situations and respond in new ways because of what he works within us. And that's why I think then kind of the next point I was making in the practicals there, the practical section about casting off sin, is why we need to be proactive in our approach to dealing with it. It's why just an in-the-moment, try as hard as you can, will never be successful for more than a few moments. It just won't, because it doesn't get at your heart.
Yeah, it's the metaphor that popped into my head right there is like if you have a leak and water is like coming out from somewhere and you just keep cleaning up the water and you keep trying, or you just shove some towels against it or whatever and try to hold it at bay without ever opening up the wall or digging back there to find out, like, where's the source of this leak? That's not really going to help. And I think, I think it'd be helpful, man, to think about, you mentioned worry. So let's do that with worry a little bit. Like let's dig, 'cause that's another one I think is common to everyone. Everyone worries about something, and we're told that we're commanded to not worry. But the question of, well, I think sometimes our language limits us and we just don't have enough words for it. So similar with anger, we're like, okay, there's sinful anger, and then but anger has a purpose. And I would say similarly to what we would call worry, I think we use worry to cover a lot of different things. So, for example, if I see my kid drive out of the driveway And I notice that I can see him, and I see that he's looking down at his phone, and he blindly pulls out, you know, around a blind corner. That's going to cause some kind of response. And we might label it as worry, but I would not say that is a sinful response, that there's some kind of anxiety or fear. I think maybe fear is the word, like, you know, that where sometimes anger and fear have the similarity of both being a thing that we quickly label as like, well, you're not supposed to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And yet we are wired and designed with those as important indicators. So anger is intended to alert us to something that is broken or unjust or wrong and not in alignment with God's kingdom. And fear or worry or anxiety is designed to alert us to something that is a threat.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, how do we then dig to know, okay, when does my fear, worry, anxiety, when does it actually go into being sinful? And how do I dig underneath that and say, you know, like, I'm worried. If I am like in a plane and all of a sudden the engines go out and we are in a free fall, I'm going to be afraid. Like, fear is going to be in there. And that is an important human response, because I am rightly responding to a situation that is very dangerous and terrifying.
Yeah.
If you're diagnosed with an illness and you have fear of, like, or you're getting a test and you're afraid of what, like, you're afraid, that is a natural response. Or if you see a growth or something and you're like, it causes some anxiety in you, that's a natural wired response, because it alerts you to something that is not, that needs to be addressed. It would be foolish, or I mean, not to give too many examples, but like, to go out into Lake Superior, if you're going to go kayaking in Lake Superior and you get a big wave that kind of startles you and scares you, that's a good response, because you are meant to respond to that and say, I don't think I should be.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you know, like, so how would you dig into that to say, okay, is this sinful fear, worry, anxiety, or is this, you know, on those same levels of with anger, and like, what questions are you asking in that?
Yeah. Fear is actually a sane response to the situation that we are in. Yeah. The world is full of threats. It actually is. Like, there is a lot that makes a lot of sense to be afraid of. It does.
All right. Thanks for joining us today. I hope this has been helpful.
Did the AI just say that was a bad response?
Yes. So AI just went just,
so I just want to reassure you, if you're like me and you have those moments, that makes sense. We know, even when we sometimes act differently, that we are a limited creature who does not have control. And we often live with the illusion or delusion, depending on the circumstance, that we do have control. It's interesting. So I do think it's related to fear, Jay. I would just affirm what you said there and agree with it. If you just looked up the word fear in the Bible, I can't tell you right now the number of times, it's a lot though, where God says, fear not, or something like that, or do not fear. So like, one of my favorites that I memorized early on in my walk with Jesus was Isaiah 41:10. Fear not, for I am with you. Be not dismayed, for I am your God. I will strengthen you. I will help you. I will uphold you with my righteous right hand. And in that passage, I think the first thing I would say is, what tone do we imagine God saying that to us through? Like, he spoke it to his people, Israel. So it wasn't just a single person, but I do think it's a very safe verse to apply. Like, he is with us. Jesus promised that, and we don't have anything to fear, because he's our shepherd. We can make this application. I don't think he says it in a scolding voice, actually. I think that God's voice there is the voice of compassion, because he knows better than we do how vulnerable we actually are. If we are like a sheep who needs a shepherd, we're extremely vulnerable in the world. So I would just say that at the outset, that I don't think that God intends for us to walk around just being racked with guilt that we were afraid of something. That's not his intention for us. But I do think there's a sense in which, like you said, Jay, our fear can drift into areas where what we're actually afraid of is our kingdom being violated, for example, or maybe what we find out as we start asking the why question about fear is that really what I so desire more than anything else is that people would like me. And that is like so important for my well-being. And if you don't like me, I'm not going to be okay. So I am just racked with worry about that and your responses to me. So what we might find underneath our fear and our worry is a different sort of desire that ends up, again, being a God-like replacement. So in that situation of people-pleasing, rather than being okay because I'm loved by God eternally as his son or daughter, actually what makes me feel so loved is when people really like me and what I do. And all of us have that at some degree. So there's like degrees of this. But I think that's when we know we've been drifting into maybe worship of something other than the living God. And that's why, again, asking these questions is so important. And it doesn't mean, what I don't want to imply by this, by the way, by this point about going deeper, is that we always have to have that in order to gain freedom from a sin that we've been entangled with. I don't know that we always do get it. Sometimes we don't know the reasons, to be honest, about why we do the things we do. I just do think it's really helpful, and often God does give some deep insights through conversations with others and his spirit working in us and reflection about what it is that's driving us so much. Because you're right, fear is the response we ought to have when we are in danger. And the other part of fear that I think is really important to remember, we in our church, people would, I think this wouldn't be controversial, it'd be most people would just get this, is that we believe that we're broken. Okay, like because of sin, we are broken. And often, though, I think that we think of that brokenness primarily in the heart, mind, invisible part of ourselves. But actually, our bodies are broken too. They are. And part of that means that our bodies are often not calibrated properly of how to respond to fear or danger, or what is a danger that should raise the level of my like fight or flight response. So that's a really important part of this. And that's why there's been some really good work done on this in like the Christian counseling area recently. But there's some really good wisdom in thinking about both the heart desire below a response underneath it, and also maybe a body's response that isn't calibrated properly, that something as simple in the moment of like just slowing down and taking some deep breaths can really help. We don't have to be afraid of that. That's actually part of God giving us wisdom to know how to help with the brokenness that we have been experiencing. Our body's often just habituated to responding in extremes to anything that alerts us to danger or that we could fear. So that's where if you've not tried it before, taking some deep, slow breaths can really help in a moment of fear. That's because our bodies too are needing redemption, and they will have that at the resurrection. They really will. I think it's just part of the totality of who we are, right?
Yeah, I think that's good to remember that we are, yes, it's the totalitarian, like it's not just our mind, it's not just our heart, it is our body. What came to my mind in that was the natural response of fear. I was thinking about when you learn to swim, or if you've ever helped a kid, a small child learn to swim, and you typically, you hold them under, their midsection while they're, floating, or they're trying, and it's scary to them. Mm-hmm. Most kids, there are some kids who are wired differently, but most kids, it's scary because there's legitimate threat there. Like if I just let a 4-year-old go or held them underwater, like they are powerless kind of in that moment. They're learning how to do this. But what you do is you wouldn't respond. You're talking about the tone that God responds to. Like if a 3 or 4 year old was scared while you're like teaching them how to swim, or any small child that's never been in the water, and you're doing that, you're holding them and you've got them as they're learning how to float, or they're floating on their back and you kind of are putting your hands underneath them, and they're scared and they kind of panic and whatever, you don't chastise them. You don't say like, "Hey, dummy, don't be afraid. Like, what in the world? What do you think is going to happen to you?" You encourage them, you comfort them by saying, "I'm here. Mm-hmm. I've got you. You can trust me. I'm not gonna let go of you." And that's essentially when I hear Jesus in the Sermon on the Mount of, do not worry. That's the tenor that it's with. That's the tone that I think he is saying that in, is you don't have to be afraid. I understand why this is scary for you. On your own, this is scary. Because guess what? On your own, you can't make things grow. You can't clothe the lilies. You can't feed all the birds. If you're going to take all that on yourself, that's what's going to cause your worry. But I'm taking care of that. And so you don't have to worry about that, because your Father in heaven knows what you need. So I think that's part of it, is asking the question of, okay, why am I afraid? And much like with anger, it turns into, justice being like, if I put the burden on myself to have to bring justice in this situation or to make this situation right, that's when I act out and anger gets, turns twisted and becomes sinful often. I think often with our worry and anxiety, it's when we're trying to have control over things that we're not called to have control over. Jesus doesn't say, hey, don't worry, look at the ants. They go and they gather all their food. So as long as you do all your hard work, then you'll be fine. He doesn't put that burden on them. He uses examples where you would say, yeah, they don't do anything really. Like they just find the food, and the lilies aren't like clothing themselves. And he uses that to, I think, address our worry and our fear of saying, okay, why am I afraid of this? What is my responsibility in this? And am I trying to seize control over something that I'm not to have control over? Or am I trying to make an outcome, a specific situation happen, because my expectations are, like, sometimes as we dig deeper in our worry, we realize, like, what I'm worried about is I'm worried that I might, like, I use the example of losing your job. I'm worried I might lose my job. Well, you might. Mm-hmm. So if that is not, like, if that situation is not an acceptable outcome for you, or because you're trying to control it, like, no, I can't lose my job because I have to, I have to be able to keep it. I have to be able to provide in this way. Then that's when it's going to turn sinful, because that's when we start to grasp and we try to make things happen, and we're not trusting God, and we're not trusting whatever his provision is. Like, how is he going to provide? How is he going to care for me? You think of Paul, like, praying that the thorn in his flesh would be removed. Like, he's expressing some fear and anxiety and stress and frustration, I think, in that. But what he's doing with that then is turning it over to God and saying, like, okay, but I know you're the one that can take this away. And I know that you're either going to take it away or you're going to give me the grace to walk through it. And so he's not attached to this particular outcome, which we talked about a couple of weeks ago of doing that. But I think that, does that make sense? Like, just that digging down and saying, okay, well, why am I worried about this? Well, why does that scare me? Like, if the engines in the plane go out, so for me, I remember I never used to really be afraid of for my life until I had small children. Mm-hmm. And when I had small children, all of a sudden, like, chest pains started to become a bigger deal. And when I would ask myself, like, why are you all of a sudden worried about this? Then I would say, like, because I don't want to leave my kids when they're small. Why? Well, and I dug down, and, like, some of that you could easily dismiss that as saying, like, well, that's just a good fatherly response. I think there's part of that. Mm-hmm. Like, my desire to care for them and to not leave Lauren, or, like, thinking about how much they would suffer, how much Lauren would suffer, if something like that happened. But one of the things I uncovered was that they wouldn't know me, that I would just be, like, some person in a picture. I remember, like, growing up, my grandfather died before I was born. And I remember, like, asking, who is that? And my mom telling me, like, oh, that's my dad, and how weird that was. And just thinking, like, it all of a sudden hit me. And in this very weird way, there was, like, this, I realized my ego is at stake. Like, what if I die when they're young and they don't really have memories of me? And then Lauren gets remarried and now some other guy raises my kids and he's their dad. Like, that, all of a sudden that really started to hit me. And I realized, like, okay, this isn't all godly stress. Like, there's a lot attached here. And, of like pride and ego and ownership and like whose kids are these actually, and like, and what is the point of all of this? And I had to confront some of those things. And so I think sometimes some people are wired to be extra hard on themselves and just like assume sin is everywhere. Like everything mm-hmm. I do probably has a sinful, but then a lot of us are motivated to quickly give ourselves an out and to not dig and say, okay, but why did I respond that way? And, mm-hmm. and so then we'll look at a situation and we'll say, well, yeah, cause that's legitimately scary. So therefore any response out of fear is okay, because the reason you were afraid is legitimate. Or like you said with the anger, the reason you were angry is legitimate. And so therefore any response, like we don't even filter at that point. It's just like, well, any response is okay because,
yep.
And you and I have both seen many times where we would say to somebody, what happened here, it is legitimate that you were angry because it is unjust and broken and evil. But your response in it now is not of Christ.
Yep.
And that's a hard conversation to have, because how quickly it'll go to, yeah, but this person did this, or this thing happened, and this wasn't fair, and you're like, you're right. But the question is now, how do you move forward in faithfulness to Jesus? And in the worry thing, I think it's ceding control to him and saying, my life exists for you. Mm-hmm. And so if you have it where my children, like even in that very sad scenario, now they're older and they would definitely remember me for better and for worse. That's a weird example maybe.
But it does. And that gets at how each one of us, the way this plays out for each one of us actually is unique. I think there's similarities and there's overlap, but we will each deal with our own sorts of fears, and sin takes on, it attaches itself to our personalities and our preferences and our experiences. And there, all of us have different experiences of life. And that's where some of those things are built. That's where we get those. That's where the sin attaches to us. If, you know, like Augie's fur on my leg. I do think all of this, I just keep thinking as we're talking, this is why it is so important as we follow Jesus that we keep being reminded, like we remind ourselves and we remind each other of what is real, what is reality, what do we know to be true about ourselves, about God, about this world, about what he's doing. We cannot do that enough for each other, because we so quickly, in the heat of the moment, we have phrases for these moments, right? We know it's a common human experience. We can forget so quickly, right? And what we're not saying, just to be clear, and hopefully based on our tone and how we're talking about these things, everyone can understand this, but we are not saying that all you need to do is know that you shouldn't do this thing, like you just shouldn't fear, and God takes care of you. If you just know that, then you should be fine. That is not what we're saying, because that's not that easy for any one of us. If it were, man, would life be different? But God's good intention for us is that we will be shaped by our response to the challenges in our life. And he uses the process, because it is a process of change, to shape us.
Yeah, like, so I think that's a really important point, that the design, if God wanted to design us to not ever have fear, he could have done that.
Yep.
But there is something about our giving that to him. So for example, you talked about in scripture, how many times it says, do not be afraid, fear not. And how often that is when they come face to face with an angel. Mm-hmm. God has manifested angels in very non-threatening mm-hmm. ways. Like Abraham with the strangers that come through, and talking about, like there's other ways that God, like heavenly beings, we see in scripture examples. You know, Jesus is like there, you know, the gardener, you know, kind of a situation where very non-threatening, very non-scary. God can do that. But so then why do the angels then present themselves so many times as these magnificent beings that terrify, that elicit a frightful response? It's because it's the same reason why Jesus allows them to have like go through this storm on the sea. Like what builds our faith is being afraid and then giving that fear over to God. To never be afraid does not build trust. You know, when you learn to swim, you have to push yourself, but then you earn that trust and develop that trust through scary situations. The people who trust God the most to provide for them are the ones who have been worried that they've gone through circumstances that are legitimately scary, that they might not have enough, but they've seen God come through. So I just want to like draw that out, that, so yeah, the answer is not to just, I've seen people try to deal with it by, they just don't think about anything. So they're never afraid about anything because they just don't ever think about it. That's not the way to go about it. The way to go about it is we are called to be engaged, because if you don't think about it, and if you just harden yourself to all things that are scary and you're just like, well, I can't control it, so I'm just not even going to think about it. Well, what you're also going to not be able to do is empathize with somebody who's suffering, or and you're going to give spiritual platitudes. You're going to be like, well, just let go and let God. And those are kind of some of the hardened phrases that we say, and they're indicative of a heart that has kind of been hardened to those realities, rather than a heart that has gone through those realities and walked through the valley of the shadow of death and realized, you're with me. Mm-hmm. And so that person is much better equipped to help somebody through, you know, suffering or through scary situations, because they've walked through it rather than just kind of skirting it. You know, like I think about Psalm 23, even though we walk through the valley of the shadow of death, we skirted around it. God didn't put, we're not a horse that he puts blinders on us so that we don't see the scary things or whatever. And he's just like, just distracting. Like we do sometimes with kids where we distract them because they're not capable of handling like what's going on. And so you just distract them. God doesn't do that. He like has us walk through the thing with our eyes fixed on him, because much like Peter walking on water, like you realize, oh, when I'm fixed on him and when my hope is in his kingdom, then I know what I can trust him for, and I don't have to be afraid.
And why does he do that? I mean, that's to me the gets at what's underneath all of this. And we see it, the author mentions it here about, for the joy that was set before Jesus, he endured the cross. Why does God do that and not just help us to avoid it or something, walk around it? Is because he loves us that much. He loves us that much that he knows how good, even when it's hard, even when it's suffering, even when it's difficult, it is because of what he can see, what he knows he is doing in us that we often lose sight of.
Yeah.
And I think that is the, and bleeding into this Sunday a little bit here, but it is amazing his love and the depths of his love, and the perfect love that he has for us goes so beyond what we can often comprehend, that we can't see those situations as an act of love, that he would want us to learn dependence, you know? Right. And when we learn dependence, what we're actually doing, like, is just learning what's real, because we are dependent whether or not we realize it or not. We are not in control. And he wants us to learn how that is a gift and how to actively depend on him and not just be in the middle of something and not realize we're depending on him. It's all because of how much he loves us. And that's why Jesus had joy as he faced what was coming, you know, the during the cross and the death that he went through as he offered himself up for us. And the other part that just, when my heart saw the idea of like, where is your gaze fixed? Yes, it's on Jesus, but what is Jesus doing? That has affected me deeply this last week, because he's not up ahead of us running. He's actually seated at this throne of victory, mm-hmm. reigning at the right hand of God. And that is for me, I don't know if it's a brand new thought, but at least the depth of it in my own heart has been increased. And I hope it's affecting other people as well. We'll dig into it a little more this Sunday again, but that's what our King is doing right now. He is reigning. He's not wringing his hands in worry. He is not afraid of the situations that we are in. He is confident. He has authority. He has gone through and accomplished what he was sent to accomplish. And he's reigning now. And he is not done with us or with this creation yet. And to me, that fills me with so much hope in the middle of those things. A friend asked me, he asked me the question a few years ago, just a rhetorical one, in a moment where I was like feeling that worry. It's like, well, what do you think God is wringing his hands over right now in your life? And the answer is he's not.
nothing.
Bringing his hands, he's not. And I just, we need that vision of who Jesus is, who our King is, that he is in control and he loves us so much and knows what we need so badly.
You know, so when you're saying that, one of the things that comes to mind is, like you said, Jesus has already finished the race. He's run the race. We see Paul say that to Timothy, that he's run the race. You have all these in Hebrews 11 who have run the race. The illustration that popped in my head when you were preaching and talking about that on Sunday was when I was 15, for whatever reason, I was really worried about driver's ed. I was convinced I was going to fail driver's ed. And what finally comforted me was I saw all these kids who were older than me who passed driver's ed. And I thought, well, they've all done it. This isn't like the norm is people pass driver's ed and they get their driver's license. Like, I had this irrational fear that somehow I was going to like mess this up and I would never get my driver's license. You know, anybody that's ever, you know, I mentioned several months ago talking about going down a water slide, and you see people do it and you see people, you know, that they all got through this. How powerful that is, you know. And you'd mentioned the cloud of witnesses, which I thought you did a great job of like making that not creepy, mm-hmm. right? And like what they're witnessing. And I love that the main point is they're witnessing to the power of mm-hmm. God and like what faithfulness to him, like how he cares for those and what he's able to do. But also like encouraging, being like, you can walk this road. I think that's all super helpful. Like just to know he's already run the race. He's already suffered more than we could possibly imagine. So there's no road that we are, no race that we are called to run, to which Jesus would say, boy, I don't know. I don't know if you, like, we've never tested those waters. We never paddled down that river. We never rode down that path. None of us are Lewis and Clark in this life. No. And even in Ecclesiastes, when he says nothing is new under the sun, it's a little desperation in the author's voice, but like the reality is that God, there's nothing, there's no blind corner for God. There's nothing that he hasn't already gone before us in. And that should give us confidence. Now, it doesn't eliminate, again, like doesn't eliminate that there are scary things. You know, when you're sitting with someone who is awaiting test results, that is a scary time. And the answer is not to say, hey, well, you don't need, you know, don't be afraid. Like, fear is sinful and perfect love casts out fear. So therefore you should just be totally fine right now. That's not the answer, but neither is panic, you know, because the answer is, well, I'm scared, but I know that whatever road this is, that God will give me grace to face it. I trust him. That's a way, that's a very real way that we can walk through these things. And you know, you're thinking, you mentioned the physiological response, like that all to me comes back to this physiological response that we don't always trust. Like we should understand that even our responses are infected by sin.
Mm-hmm.
So it may not be sinful, for example, to respond and be afraid when the engines cut out on an airplane, but our responses are still infected by sin. And so what I thought of was a car alarm, where if you have a car alarm, there's a design to the car alarm and it is supposed to alert you when someone's trying to break into your car. We have all been in situations where car alarms have gone off because you walked by a car or a stiff breeze came up or a leaf fell on it or whatever. And had that in the, you know, I remember living when you're living in a city, car alarms go off all the time and it is very annoying at 2 a.m. or whatever. And I thought about that, of like a car alarm that never goes off, even when somebody's jimmying the lock or whatever, is useless. That's not good. And our responses of anger, fear, like all these different responses are designed in us. They are wired in us for a reason. They are meant to alert us to something. And so to deaden those is not the response. You talked about redeeming those.
Mm-hmm.
Deadening them is not that's not the way, any more than the way of like, oh, well, I can fix the car alarm, I'll just remove the car alarm.
Mm-hmm.
Like, well, okay, well, it's no longer going to do. So if someone tries to steal your car, well, it's not going to alert you. But what often happens then in us is we are the car alarm that goes off every time a leaf we need to call into question, like, is this response so not only like asking why am I worried, but I think it's okay to also call into question of, was this an actual threat? Like, should I be concerned about this? Like, should I really be worried about this? Am I just a car alarm that's going off all the time? Mm-hmm. We want to be careful. Like, and one of the ways to deal with that is in community, right? Like, it is a good and right thing to ask trusted people of, hey, is my response mm-hmm. proportionate? Is it understandable? Is it like, and as I'm trying to figure out how to deal with my fear or my anger or my frustration or like thinking about when we're I think about forgiveness, you know, and it's very easy to fall into the ditch of just saying like, well, we're supposed to forgive, so just forgive, and we just try to rush that process. But then we also know you can fall into the other ditch of hanging on to something and not actually moving towards forgiveness, but just choosing to hang on to unforgiveness and mm-hmm. bitterness. Well, how do you know? You know, like, one of the ways you do is in community.
Yes. We need each other to see what it is that we can't see.
Right.
And it's
from people who have gone before, right?
Exactly.
Like, imagine being on an airplane when there's turbulence. You can always tell somebody who's never been on a plane before and they experience turbulence and it's scary. Well, what do? You look around. I always look at the flight attendants. Mm-hmm. Flight attendants aren't nervous. You know, or if they're not doing anything, if they're just like continuing to serve the drinks, then I'm not worried. I know they're supposed to stay calm, but if they thought something was happening, they're not going to still be pouring your Diet Coke.
Yeah, like, you'll be able to tell.
You'll be able to tell. And so you look to them, like, and that's what happens in community.
And we can calibrate then to them.
Right.
You know, and I do think, and, you know, again, to Jesus seated at the throne, I think that is meant to be something that we can calibrate our hearts to, mm-hmm. you know, like even in those moments when it is right to be afraid and it is right to be angry, we can look at him and see that he is accomplishing things in us and around us and in the people around us that are beyond what we understand. And I do think, you know, we always talk about this, like how we need each other. And this, to me, sin clinging to us and running this endurance race with Jesus is one of the best examples. And I think most obvious ones of why God did not intend for us to do this alone, that discipleship in the New Testament is always in community. It's never just an isolated thing. It's among other followers of Jesus that we grow. And so much of it is that while we need him, we need each other. And I think that's what Hebrews 11 was meant to say, you know, very shortly. And what this beginning of Hebrews 12 is too, that we are in an endurance race and it is not an unsupported one. It is one in which we have great support and we need to avail ourselves of that. And to not do that is not only unwise, we will just miss out on all of that God is doing, because we are running with other people who are also running the race, right? So we have those who've gone ahead of us, the one who's seated at the throne of God, right? Hand of God. We have the great cloud of witnesses. And then we have brothers and sisters right now who are at various stages of that race, right? And it is just a gift that we get to together do this. It really is. It's a gift.
And it's a necessity. Like, there's a reason why God saves us and redeems us as a people. And I just, and I know we always make this plea that you have to be in community. It's not possible to follow Jesus in isolation. There's no example of that. We are designed. I was thinking about the dog hair clinging, like literally today, we don't have a dog, we have cats. And I saw, you know, my wife here, she's helping with VBS, and I showed up and she came over and she gave me a hug and then she immediately started picking cat fur off of me.
Yep, that's my... 'Cause
I didn't see it,
no.
Right? Like, I'm not looking at myself, and we have this misguided thought that will no one knows me better than me. No one knows the situation better than me. No one knows like reality better than me. And that's just not true. There are things that I know better. Like I know better what I'm thinking right now than you could. You can't tell me like, oh, I know you're thinking this. Like, well, no, you don't. But there are other things. You know what my eyebrows look like right now.
Yep.
You know, like if I have something in my teeth. My wife always says that the mark of a good friend is someone who will tell you you have something in their in your teeth.
Mm-hmm.
Because you can't see it and you don't actually know. You'll have things, you have fur, like everything. So sin that entangles us, we get so anxious about like, well, how do I, oh, I don't really want to call this out in this person or point this out. It's actually the loving thing to do, to say, hey, I, this seems to be entangling you. This seems to be tripping you up. You seem to be very, like, you just keep getting hung up on, like, you know, what other people are thinking about you, or your worry seems to be, like, crippling you, and you seem to be, like, I see you doing this. That's something that we need each other to do, but it's not something that you're going to get from a person that is just an acquaintance. It has to be somebody that has actually walked with you and knows you, and that you know loves you, and otherwise it's just it doesn't work. That's why it's awkward. Like whenever we people talk about like, well, it's awkward to do that, it's because we don't actually have the kind of community that Scripture talks about and that we're commanded to have. And then we also then don't have the cloud of witnesses. Like we don't experience that cheering on, which is what accountability is supposed to be. Think about how perverted accountability
yep.
became over just like it became motivated by shame and like checking boxes and everything. But what it's supposed to be is supposed to be an encouragement and a brother or sister who you know is watching and is going to tell you if you have something in your teeth.
Mm-hmm.
You know they're going to look out for you like that. And it's a really beautiful thing.
Yeah, it's crazy how some of our experiences of what was intended to be such a good thing, like accountability, end up being ways of encouraging people to be people pleasers.
Right.
And just feeding that part of ourselves that we don't really need to have fed. But really, you know, getting back to what we were talking about earlier, what we need so much, I love this idea, it's not mine, but I just have applied it to my life for years. In those relationships, we need to be cardiologists who can seek what's going on in our hearts and draw it out of us and help make observations. And you do that not from a viewpoint of like, I'm the doctor, you're the patient. It's like, no, we're all in this. We all need each other. It's not just some of us need other people and some of us have arrived and we don't need anyone anymore. It's we're all needing other people to help us see what is happening within you right now. Externally, I see this. What's going on inside? Because no one else can tell you that, right? But they can at least alert you. Yes. It seems like maybe this is happening. That's the way I think things like, I mean, we just need better words for it. You know, it's accountability maybe has been used so much that it's not helpful, but that's the way in which we can be allies or we can be brothers and sisters in Christ following him together. That's life-giving.
I love how you just said that right there, the observational. So if you've made it this far in the podcast, you just got a piece of gold here at the end. But so often the reason why we don't confront sin in others, I think, or help them with things that are entangling them is we don't want to come off as judgmental or we're scared of how they're going to respond or whatever. But you don't have to diagnose things.
No.
And you don't have to like know why this is happening. You can just observe. And say, hey, I've noticed that you've been, you've really been short, you know, in these interactions, or, you know, I've noticed that I haven't seen you at church in a while. Like I've just noticed that. And sometimes, you know, it's very different than, oh, you haven't been in church.
Yeah. A scolding.
You're right. Like somebody says, oh, well, we actually took a month long vacation, you know, we got, oh, awesome. That's so great. You know, but, or I've noticed that you've been, that you kind of responded in this way and then you find out like, oh, they've actually been really sick and you're like, oh, okay, well now I understand why that was happening, whatever the case is. But you don't have to like, it's more of just an observation that you're setting out there. I've seen several times in the last year stories about, have you seen these things where someone notices like a, I remember there was a news anchor where a viewer called in and said, hey, it looks like there's a lump, like, and they discovered cancer, you know, because a viewer called in and said, now imagine if that news anchor responded with like, that is so judgmental of you. Like, that is, how dare you criticize my appearance? The viewer's not criticizing their appearance. The viewer's heart is to say like, I'm observing this. And if the anchor goes and gets it checked out and says, oh, it turns out I had a swollen lymph node because I just had, gut was sick. Oh, great. Okay. Like it's not like the viewer is going to know that is definitely cancer. I am diagnosing that or whatever. It's alerting you. Like, we need one another to alert things of, hey, I've noticed that you seem to be interacting differently with your spouse. Mm-hmm. I've noticed that when I ask you how things are going, I've noticed increased negativity. Mm. I've noticed, hey, I saw that Facebook post and I just noticed I'm just observing. That doesn't seem like you, or that doesn't seem like who or you've told me, and like, these were the accountability thing. Like, hey, when we ask one another, hey, can you watch this in me and say, okay, well, hey, I noticed this. I just think so much of it would observational with people that you care about and that you are not coming at it with self-righteousness and not coming at it with judgment and not coming at it with like, oh, I know what the problem is and I know how to fix it. Or sometimes we get into it and we assume that you're struggling with something the reason why I'm struggling. You pointed that out with anger. Like, there's a lot of reasons why someone, mm-hmm. They might be exhibiting anger because they're afraid, and somebody else might be exhibiting anger because they're really fixated on justice and wanting to inflict harm. Mm-hmm. Very different reasons. And we tend to project and think like, oh, well, I know what that's like. All that to say, the answer can't be, well, I just don't, Jesus says not to judge, so therefore I'm not going to bring anything up. Well, think about how unloving it would be to know, to observe something that you know is like, oh, this seems like a warning sign, and to not say anything to somebody that you care about and then have that sin eat at them and destroy them. Like, that's not actually loving.
No.
Being loving is loving. That's what when people say, well, like, is that loving? Like, well, being loving is loving. So your tone, your demeanor, your posture, your heart, your motivations, like, all of that determines what is loving when we bring attention to something for somebody. But anyway, we probably should land the plane on that. But that, I like that you pointed that out, of the observational cardiologist kind of a thing, or just learning how to ask questions and how to draw things out and then how to just make observations.
Yeah. We hope that it's helpful for you, everyone who's listening, and to invite other people into that with you.
Yeah. And that's, by the way, that's a way you can start that kind of opening that door. Like, you probably, here would be a really practical thing to do. You did a great job of ending with practical things in the sermon. So let's end with a practical thing in the podcast. If you're saying, I don't know if I have a person, like, use the something caught in your teeth. Do you have friends who would tell you that you have something in your teeth? Do you have friends who would tell you that sin is clinging to you, or that they're observing that? If you don't, one way to open up the lines of communication is to invite it in. That can open a two-way thing. It may or may not, but one of the ways to open it up is to say, to confess to a friend that you trust, hey, I struggle with complaining, and I think that that grips my heart and it entangles me, and I'm drawn to see the negative in these situations first all the time. But I don't want to be that way. And I feel like God is working on that. Could you tell me when you notice that in me? It's not an accountability. Hey, make sure I don't do this. And, hey, shame me when this happens. But can you just tell me when you notice it? And then that person can say, like, hey, I noticed that whenever you're talking about your job, your first responses are negative. And then how you receive that, then that starts to open the door. It starts to expand people's imagination so they can imagine what those conversations would look like. Because the reality is, a lot of people don't have any of those. And we don't want to invite it in. If anything, we want to be the one to tell other people, like, yeah, I'm happy to make observations in you, but don't make any observations in me. So the first step is always going to be to invite people into that. So there you go. And if you need help with that, let us know. And we want to connect you with others. Like you know, like you said earlier, Jeff, we are not, you don't have to talk to us. There are a lot of godly people in our church family who can have these conversations and probably better than you and I, you know, would in any given circumstance. So let us help you get connected, talk to people, trust the Lord to set those things up on a Sunday morning and just go and talk to somebody and see what doors God opens. And again, ask us for help and we can help you get connected with other people who can enter into this kind of, in this walk of following Jesus. So great job last week, Jeff.
Thanks, brother, by the grace of God, right?
Yeah, it was awesome. I hope that the podcast has been a helpful extension of what Jeff talked about on Sunday and that it's been helpful to you. We appreciate, as always, you taking the time to listen. Until next time, grace and peace.